Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of A Good Drop, where every other week or so, we gather all our Australian friends and we say, no, we're going to call it what we bloody hell want to.
Yes. Yes, that's right. We are talking about Prosecco this week, the Italian sparkling white wine.
Indeed. I'm Stu.
I'm Michael.
Cheers.
Cheers.
We're back again with another blown mic channel.
yes, we are. These all sparkling whites, they do open loudly. It's a satisfying noise.
It is. It is. Well, not for me, because I have to edit this thing. But it's good. I'm looking forward to this one, because Prosecco is kind of like champagne in the fact that it's sparkling, but it's also not like champagne, like... because it's made differently.
Yes, it's made using different grapes. It's made using a different style entirely. And it's made in a completely different region. But it's also somewhat controversial because, yeah, it's also made in Australia.
Yep. Since the 90s, in fact.
And we'll get to that a little later on. But we are starting by testing... an OG Prosecco from the Prosecco region of Italy, which has the proper...
designation to origin.
Yes.
Yeah. I forget what the Italians call it, but it's essentially the same thing. Protected designation of origin.
Yeah, which is quite recent. Only actually came into existence in 2009.
And I believe that there is also another... No, I don't believe. There is, in fact, another... acronym that we can throw in to this one, which is DOCG.
Yes, DOCG.
Which I believe is a geographic protected designation.
Yes, and apparently it relates to several regions in Italy that are allowed to produce it. Hmm. So, I mean, champagne has to come out of the Champagne region of France. Very specifically. But this isn't just one town or one area in Italy that's allowed to produce Prosecco.
There is a town called Prosecco.
But that's not the only place you can make it.
No.
Not anymore. I mean, it never was.
No.
But
they're trying to lock it down, aren't they?
They are. They're trying to lock it down, and the battle goes on. Because Australia and a lot of other New World wine producers have been making... sparkling white wines called Prosecco for a very long time, and still are. And in fact, today we will be comparing an Australian Prosecco with this Italian Prosecco that we've just opened.
Mm. It's supposed to be the same grape, but, you know, as we've talked about before, it's totally different climates make totally different wines.
Well, exactly right. So they should... even if they've been made with exactly the same method, taste different, just based on the fact that the majority of Australian Proseccos are made in the north of the state of Victoria.
Mm. So southern Australia.
Yeah. And yes, it's a cooler climate and it's, well, a higher altitude, I think, than Italy.
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. Victoria does have some quite beautiful hilly regions, hinterlands, if you will.
Yes.
And could quite possibly be higher than Italy. However, the Italian Prosecco grapes, that are not called that, the grape is called Glera. And it's quite often, when it's grown according to the DOCG... it's grown on the side of a mountain.
Yes, and I suppose the question is, how high is that mountain? Where on the mountain is it? What are they doing with the mountain? Is there a lonely goat herd there?
Who knows. But yeah, the grape is called Glera, and it's a grape that's been around since Roman times. Which, you know, makes sense being Italy.
Yeah, and now there are in fact 14 clones of Glera and 5 clones of Glera Lungo that are currently registered in the Italian National Variety Register that can be used for Prosecco, along with very small amounts of Chardonnay, Pinot Bianco, Pinot Grigio, and Pinot Nero.
It's not called Pinot Grigio. It's called Pinot Gris.
Yeah. Along with very small amounts of Chardonnay, Pinot Bianco, Pinot Gris, and Pinot Nero.
So, shall we talk about how it's made?
Yes, let's talk about how they produce it, and I guess how it came to be, because historically, in the 1800s, when they began making Prosecco and experimenting with how to make it, they originally used the classic champagne method.
Yeah.
Originally it wasn't even sparkling.
No, it was flat. It was called Tranquillo. It was the name they used for still Prosecco. And the name they still use for still Prosecco.
But then as they decided, what if we made it sparkle like this champagne thing that comes out of France, they attempted to make it initially using the champagne method, and I'm sure that worked.
The method traditionnel, as you might see on many, many bottles. And that is where they ferment. They do a secondary fermenting inside each individual bottle. They throw some yeast, throw some sugar in there, and seal it up, and away they go.
Yeah, and after a lot of experimentation, around the 1950s, they began using the Martinotti Charmat method, which is now mandated by law that if you are in Italy producing a sparkling Prosecco, you must use that method.
And it's similar to the traditional method, but also very different. It's essentially the same thing. It's a secondary fermentation, but it's done in a very large steel barrel, essentially. And they ramp up the pressure and the sparkles, the bubbles in that, and then put it in the bottle.
Yeah, and it was apparently first invented and patented in 1895.
Oh, that took them a while to get to change their minds on it then?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And by the Italian winemaker Federico Martinotti.
Explains the name.
Yeah, and then in 1907, Eugene Charmat, a Frenchman, made some improvements to the process and patented it under his name. Then in Italy, the process, which is now sometimes known as the Martinotti method, and also sometimes known as the Charmat method, was altered slightly again, and Prosecco.
Now it's quite often called the Martinotti Charmat method.
And occasionally referred to as the Italian method.
Yeah.
Because, of course, the other one's French, isn't it? It's the French method. I mean, no one would call it that, but it is. It's French.
And I suppose you could also almost call it the Italian job.
Yes. So to do that, just as you mentioned, they begin with the uncarbonated base wine, and then they mix it with sugar and yeast and put it in a large stainless steel pressure tank or autoclave. And the yeast and sugar cause a second fermentation in the closed tank, which is held under pressure, so the carbon dioxide from the fermentation is forced into the wine. It takes between 1 to 6 weeks, after which the fizzy wine is then immediately filtered and bottled. And the dosage is added at bottling, usually to a brut level of sweetness, the dosage being 6 to 12 grams of sugar per litre.
Yeah, they do what's called backsweeten for all you homebrewers working at home. But just because they do it that way in very large batches doesn't mean the wine is uncomplicated or simple. It does make... Holy moly, that wind is nuts. I don't know if you guys can hear it through the through your earbuds, but it's whistling through all the doors, the cracks and crevices in my apartment.
Yeah, I don't think it's coming up, thankfully, but let's get back to talking about the Charmat method. Because bottling the wines directly after second fermentation without aging means that they get a fresh fruit character to them. And it makes the Charmat method ideal for wines made from aromatic grape varieties like Moscato and Riesling. So it is a method that's actually used on more than just Prosecco.
Yeah. That's why they don't call it the Prosecco method.
Exactly. And the technique will help retain the grape's aromas more than the traditional method.
Interesting.
Which introduces more nutty, toasty flavors from aging on the wine's lees, dead yeast cells from fermentation.
Yeah.
And wines carbonated via the Charmat method have 2 to 4 atmospheres of pressure, which means they have softer carbonation than wines made in the traditional method.
Mm.
And Charmat wines are filtered. And Charmat wines are filtered, so there is never any sediment in the bottle. The wine comes out crystal clear.
Well, on that note, we should pour some of this crystal clear Prosecco into these crystal clear glasses so we can drink this crystal clear carbonated beverage.
Yes, I am curious about this crystal clear carbonation.
And of course, we have this second bottle of Jacob's Creek Reserve Prosecco to... we should talk about this first bottle. Never mind the Jacob's Creek. Yeah, wow, it is clear.
Yes, no, fear not. I will put more in. It was very bubbly.
Less bubbly than a champagne style.
Mmm.
Splashing it everywhere. What do you think this is, a bar?
It's splashing itself everywhere. I cannot change the laws of physics.
Well, not with that attitude. Wow, it is clear. It is a very, very pale color.
Yeah, I mean, it's a... I guess you could describe it as... It actually looks more like a... more like a mineral water.
It's, well,
than any sort of a wine.
If my, I think it looks more like a cider.
Color. Oh yes, yes, a very clear but very effervescent cider.
Yeah. So, I sort of alluded to this before, but Prosecco comes in 3 levels of bubbliness. You got the. You've got the Tranquillo, which I mentioned before, and then you've got the Frizzante, or Fizzy, which is like a semi-sparkling, and you've got Spumante, or fully sparkling, which I think is what we've got here. Let me double check. Sometimes they are not very specific on the... bottles, guys, as you probably know. Produced according to the rules of... Oh, so, sorry. We have the Sensei Prosecco.
Sensei
Prosecco. Apparently I'm in Japan. We have the Sensei Prosecco, Denominación de Origen Controlada. It is a Brut Prosecco, pure 18K gold, prodotto in Italia. 18K Sensi. I'm excited. I want to try this. It's a fantastic looking bottle. It stands out a lot.
It certainly does. Apparently a limited edition gold bottle, this 18K edition.
They probably brought it out just for Christmas and New Year's.
Potentially, yes. Yes. It doesn't tell us an awful lot on the bottle, sadly.
No.
Because it doesn't say it's...
It says 2020 on the back. It
says 2020 on the back.
So it's a... Usually they say NV for non-vintage.
For non-vintage.
Well, European wines definitely do.
And some just say non-vintage, some Australian ones.
Yeah.
But certainly, yes. I mean, if this says, it says 2020, so it is a 2020 vintage. And as it is now 2022...
it's perfect.
Yeah. Well, let's smell and talk about the nose.
Mm. Wow, it smells very fresh.
Mm, very fresh, very fruity. And a smell that's very reminiscent of a regular dry white wine, really.
Yes. Well, it is a brut.
It is, so it is dry.
Mm. Brut with a without the E on the end, so it should still be nice and gentle.
Yes. Now, something that we should keep in mind before we taste is that apparently this particular method, the Italian method, produces a sweeter sparkling wine than the champagne method.
Which makes sense, because they have a little bit more control over when the... when the secondary fermentation ends.
Yes. Yes, it's in a big tank.
Yeah. And they can, once it's done, they can sweeten it again.
Yeah, exactly.
But with the champagne method, obviously it's sealed in a bottle. They can't exactly open it and say, tell the yeast to knock it off.
Yeah. Yeah, so it may be a little... well, the yeast is probably going to eat more sugar.
Yeah. Indeed.
Well, let's taste, yes.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Wow, that is a little bit sweeter. But that's so easy to drink. Yeah. Holy moly. Like, it says brut, and I was expecting something a little tart, a little dry. This is really mild.
Mm, I mean, it is dry, and certainly the aftertaste and the mouthfeel on the tongue is definitely reminiscent of a dry wine.
Yeah.
But the flavors are very subtle.
Yeah. It's not... because quite often, those extra bubbles... It's not as bubbly as a champagne either. Yeah. Or and a champagne style.
And the bubbles do often kill off some of the more subtle flavors.
Yeah. Or even add some more bitterness or dryness.
Yeah.
I think most of the dryness is with the bubbles.
Yeah, that may well be the case. And I'm picking up, it's very sweet compared to a champagne.
Mm. Sweet compared to a champagne brut.
Yes. Mm. But yeah, I am getting a lot of fruitiness. I think a little bit of nuttiness.
Yeah.
But just maybe a very subtle hint of that, and yeah, a lot of, can't quite put my finger on it. I mean,
like apple pear kind of lightness.
Yeah
Yeah, this is quite nice.
It is.
It's, to be honest, it's nicer than I was expecting.
Yes. I think the last Prosecco I had was a Prosecco Rosé, and of course that changes things up entirely.
Mm. Yes. And some would argue that that's not a Prosecco at all.
Well, yes, and there's a lot of those in Australia, though. Very, very large section dedicated to Prosecco Rosé at the bottle shop we went to today.
Mm. It's pretty nice. Shall we crack the second one to compare?
Yes, let's.
The Jacob's Creek Reserve Prosecco. There's no year on this one at all. The Jacob's Creek Reserve Prosecco is a delicate fruit-driven wine showcasing flavors of pear blossom and citrus with slightly floral notes and a hint of sweetness. It sounds like it's going to be similar, but I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, I mean, theoretically, it should be similar. It's made with a similar grape, but at the same time, it's made in a completely different country. We don't know what altitude it's made at. We don't know what sort of soil the grapes were growing on. And these are not things that you need to know before buying a wine, just so you can be aware. You don't have to know that. Most people don't. But they will make a difference to the flavor.
And I think at that point it just comes down to pick your vineyard.
Yeah, well, exactly right. And of course, the winemaker themselves, you could have two different winemakers producing wine from the same vineyard, and they both produce the same type of wine, and they're going to taste different.
Yeah,
because the different winemakers have made different choices in how they produce it.
Yeah, that's a blending choice at that point, though, I guess.
Well, and I guess when they choose to harvest the grapes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of little choices.
Yeah. All right, here goes. I'm not as nuanced at popping corks like you are. Not as practiced at popping cork bottles. Doesn't seem as fizzy as the other one, does it?
No, the other one did just sort of blast bubbles up the glass, and I had to stop and wait for it to settle before pouring again, and this one's certainly not doing that.
I still had to pause, but nowhere near as long. Same colour. And
yeah, in a side-by-side comparison, exactly the same colour.
I think the Australian one's a little bit darker. But not by much. Yeah, you'd be hard-pressed to pick the difference.
Yes.
All right. There you are. Here I am. And I suppose let's smell.
Yes, let's. Oh, well, wow. That immediately smells like a different wine.
Yeah. It smells more like a Chardonnay, doesn't it?
Yeah, it has a really floral note to it. And, I mean, yeah, a little bit fruity, but...
Almost a little cheesy.
Yeah, I get like, where you're coming from there.
Just like, not so much smell-wise, but almost smell texture, if that makes any sense. I don't know.
But, yeah, definitely...
Like, it smells like a Chardonnay.
Yes, it smells still fruity, but much more floral.
Yeah.
And I think a little fresher.
Could be. Didn't have to sit on a boat or a plane for 6 months. Oh, wow. Going back to the Italian one, the Italian wine, the Sensi, smells so much more like raisiny or more like sultanas or raisins. That sort of sticky, almost sticky sweet.
Yeah, they really are immense differences in the smell. But now I'm really curious to taste.
Well, let's do it.
Yes.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Huh. That is way sweeter than it smells.
Yeah.
But not terribly sweet.
No, similar mouthfeel, but slightly different. I feel it's a little more tannic.
Yeah, a little more tannic, a little more bitter. More floral.
Yeah, I'm definitely getting that crispness of apple and pear. And it's very crisp.
Yeah. It's totally different.
Yeah.
Totally different experience.
Which, admittedly, when we've compared the... When we've done our regional comparisons of wines, we found this.
Yeah. And we expected it.
Yeah, we did. We very much expected that there would be differences.
I expected there to be this much difference, at least.
But
it's always so striking, I guess.
Yeah, oh, every time. It just catches you by surprise. And I suppose, as we've come to expect, the Australian has bolder flavours.
Yeah. Well, us of less refined tastes than the Europeans.
Yeah, I mean, because we both really enjoying, like, I know I was really enjoying the subtlety of the Italian Prosecco.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I thought it was a lot nicer.
And that's not to say that I'm not enjoying the Australian Prosecco. It's also very pleasant.
It's almost lost now. I just took a sip of the Italian one, and it's almost lost after having a drink of the Australian a drink of the Jacob's Creek.
And admittedly, they're wines that you would, like, if someone were to look up, what should I pair a Prosecco with, you'd be misled. Because what you should pair the Italian Prosecco with, and what you should pair the Australian Prosecco with...
two different things.
Vastly different things.
Yeah. The Italian one, I could see, you pairing it with a lot of more subtle things. So, I could see fish, I could see... like sort of those light those light subtle aperitives, not aperitives, entrees.
Yes, light subtle entrees, like, little
what's the word? Pedophores? Not pedophores, hors d'oeuvres.
Hors d'oeuvres, yeah. Yes, light subtle hors d'oeuvres with, you know, seafood, definitely, but the more subtle seafoods.
Yeah, ghost cheese, the brie, I can see. You wouldn't pair this with the Sensi with a blue.
Oh, I'm not sure you'd pair either of them with a blue, but...
no. But the Jacob's Creek, you could pair with cheddar, like vintage cheddar.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that pairing quite well with a smoked brie or camembert.
Yeah.
Something with a bit more heft to the flavor profile.
Yeah.
And also the stronger flavored seafoods. Like, I think it would probably pair quite well with a salt and pepper calamari.
Oh, yeah. Which is kind of a staple in Australian luncheons.
Yes.
Like going out for lunch, salt and pepper calamari. Yeah, I don't really have anything else, though.
Yeah, no, I think that's it for me as well. So, Prosecco, great varietal. And
a lot of variety in this variety.
Yeah, and definitely a lot of variety as you'd hope. So, if you're wanting something that's a sparkling, I guess, just to finish off by summing up... a sparkling that is not champagne and is not a champagne style sparkling, that's still potentially dry but a little sweeter, a little easier to drink.
Yeah.
I would say that Prosecco is probably the one for you. If you struggle with sparkling white wines at a celebration, try Prosecco.
Yeah. I definitely struggle with the bubbles in champagne and champagne style wines, just because they're big bubbles, aren't they?
Yeah, and these are a very fine bubble in the Prosecco.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Like, the just different volume of bubbles in a wine.
Yeah, so that the different method of production,
yeah,
results in different carbonation.
Yeah,
fantastic.
Wonderful. So if you like to what you heard, everyone, be sure to hit that subscribe button if you haven't already. We are A Good Drop All About Alcohol on your favorite podcast app, including Stitcher, Spotify, Podbean, Apples, Googles, and many more.
Yes, you can also find us on the Meta social medias, Facebook and Instagram. It's all Meta now.
Doesn't matter to me.
But either way, you can find us there as A Good Drop Podcast.
Yeah. And if you want to check out our giant library of previous episodes, jump on our website, agooddrop.com.au. And if you've got any comments, questions, feedback, or if you've got a favorite Prosecco we should try, shoot us an email at agooddrop@gmail.com.
And do be sure to tune in next time when we ask the question, does the quality of the glass make a difference to the taste of the wine? We've asked it before, but we'll answer it in that episode.
Yes, stay tuned for more sparkling.
Indeed.
So until then, cheers.
Cheers.